matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Yes, Renegades or Mavericks. Last night, John McCain, solidified that on his legacy, the Maverick part. And you got to wonder if, just the other day, Donald Trump tweeting out, so great that John McCain is coming back to vote. Brave American hero. Thank you, John. You got to go this morning. You got to wonder if he's thinking about doing a Scaramucci and, in transparency, deleting that tweet. Oh. Anyway, here to talk about last night's, the late night that it was and what it's probably going to mean going forward and what we need to be doing and all of that stuff. I've asked our good friend Helene Olin to come talk with us. She's the author of Pound Foolish, also the co-author of The Index Card, both great books on your money, the future, all of that. Helene, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me on.
So, what'd you think? Did you stay up? I guess the first question, did you stay up last night and watch that little presentation?
Of course I stayed up. I want to apologize in advance to all the listeners if I sound a little tired this morning. But I'm sure I'm not the only one. So that was incredible. But I do want to say, while we're all congratulating John McCain here, who did do a great thing, I don't want to sound like I'm dissing it. This wouldn't have happened without two women who were steadfast through the entire process.
Yep.
And that's Alaska's Lisa Murkowski and Maine's Susan Collins, who were vehemently against this from the beginning, stayed against this, and managed to do it without much in the way of their own drama, I should say, because there was plenty of drama surrounding them as well, including threats to Murkowski yesterday from the Trump administration, with the Department of Interior Secretary calling up and threatening various funding for Alaska if she didn't switch her vote.
No, do you think, when I heard that, I go, if it were me, that would solidify my vote against you. You're trying to strong arm me. Do you think that could have had something to do with it? Or, this is just bad. This is just bad legislation. This is just a bad process.
The whole thing is bad. But what it pointed to, in my view, is the amateur hour vibe of the Trump administration. One thing I want to make a point of, it's probably a side note this morning, but it's worth always making, is in this country, there's always this sort of hatred of politicians and, anybody could do this job better, right? Well, we elected a non-politician to the White House, and look what happened. As it turned out, it is a job that people need to know how to do. What did you do? What do you know, right? And ditto, by the way, his communications director, of which I'm sure you're talking about on another segment, and you don't need me to discuss yet again. The Scaramucci performance of yesterday.
Yeah, just another one of those moments where you go, this administration not even close to ready for prime time, and that guy, just another one of those people. You go, really? You chose him?
Right. I that was incredible. As I always say about the Trump administration, anytime I'm nostalgic for 1970s New York, I just sort of watch the Trump show for 5 minutes. it was like that here in the 70s, for those of you who weren't here. So.
Yeah. No, it's amazing to me. And look, the fact that, the two women stood up against it. I'm looking at the representative from Texas, Blake Farenthold.
Oh, God.
Who said, we can settle this with a duel. If it was a man from Texas, we'd take him on.
Yeah, it was incredible. But that being said, John McCain, really deserves credit here. I don't want to sound like I'm dissing the guy. He came in, he was ill. He did it quite dramatically, as he often does, right?
Yeah.
And he did the right thing in the end, which
loves
was important.
The show.
Could have he shut this down Tuesday and not had it so dramatic? Yes, but he didn't. And, as a parent say, you reward good behavior, right?
Absolutely.
And he did something. He did the right thing. That being said, there's still problems here. While, we're all celebrating, and we should be celebrating, this thing, the exchanges are not going to potentially live on happily and healthy from here. There's still major issues going forward. The Trump administration could still not fund the you know, pay back the insurance companies for, you know, subsidizing lower-income people. They could definitively not enforce the mandate as forcefully. A lot of people could just decide that they don't want to buy insurance because they think the Trump administration won't be enforcing the mandate. The fact is the rates still are going up at fairly dramatic rates. The networks are continuing to narrow. Less people signed up this year than last year, and this was before all the chaos. You know, this is not exactly a great situation going forward. It's just avoided sudden death today.
Right. And the thing is, and as I said in the opening, you know, they're going to starve the beast. That's their MO. And if you think it's going to go away, it's not. And there's no real celebrating here. I mean, you know, there are millions of people in this country who are watching this going, you know, tomorrow, you know, the day after, I could lose care. I look at the ADAPT people who, you know, I remember, like I said earlier, I remember the woman who I met in Harrisburg when the governor of Pennsylvania was gutting funding for people with disabilities, saying, look, you know, this is going to kill us. And if their legislative pen is going to kill us, I'm going to die right here so you see it.
Right. And I mean, to me, the really important point of this is that besides the fact that this is horrific and shouldn't be happening, but it is that the Democrats need to have a game plan going forward. And one of the game plans going forward needs to be that we need to push for universal coverage, whether you call that single payer or universal coverage. You know, there's a lot of hair splitting going on over this right now, as you know. But we need to keep the conversation moving forward. Yep. The fact is this system really is not working very well for a lot of people, even if we manage to, as I said, keep it from sudden death yesterday and today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, though, you're the economic person. You're the person who kind of understands this. I've been saying what we need, really, you want to bring down premiums. You want to make sure everyone gets coverage. You want to make sure that pre-existing conditions are covered and the caps and all the, if you want the good stuff, I see the only way forward is one insurance pool. Stop with all of the Band-Aids. Stop with all of the taking the sick and the elderly and the kids out of the private market. One pool. That's all we need.
Medicare for all. For what it's worth, I believe when most people say single payer, they mean Medicare expansion. I'm fairly convinced of that. It's what most people's familiarity with single payer is,
yes.
Which isn't full single payer because there's Medicare Advantage, right?
Right.
But to most of us, that is single payer. I mean, I think the average person understands Medicare is single payer. Government sets various rates, and I mean, to me, that is where the argument needs to move forward, is toward that, because this isn't going away. It's just not. And as somebody else pointed out to me this morning, the fact is this could still be reintroduced. Will it be? You know, who knows? You know, I would say logic says no, but we're dealing with, you know, absolute chaos in Washington at this point. Anything is possible, and to sit back and go, oh, this won't be reintroduced, is, I think, a little bit optimistic at this point.
I mean,
it's
look,
unlikely, but I think it needs to be out there.
No, I think they're going to come back again and again and again because they've got to keep the base riled up.
Right.
You know, they've got to keep, you know, their people all frothing at the mouth. You know, but you look at the reality is, and you know, you look at all of the CBO scores. You know, the last one, 16 million going to lose coverage. The one before, the Senate one, going to 22 million. The House one, 23 million, going to lose coverage. You know, a lot of those people had to be Republican voters, and at some point, you know, those voters have got to be the ones who step forward and say, "Stop this already."
Right. I mean, the thing I keep saying is, you know, we have this debate, as you know, is whether people who voted for Trump are gettable, right? You know, and some people are like, these people are unredeemable. They're not going to vote for us. Let's move on. And others are like, no. We need to, you know, convert some of them. I tend to lean towards the latter camp. I mean, some of these people are bound to realize they've been had at some point. And I think when we say, oh, we can't reach these people, I think we need to remember this was an insanely close election, right? I mean, a few thousand votes in a couple of states and Hillary Clinton would be president, and you and I might still be on the phone, but we'd be talking about something completely different today. And we don't really need to convince that many people they were had, right? And there's enough people out there who were had by this administration who thought they were voting for somebody who was looking out for their interests and are slowly discovering they're not, that this needs to be pushed out there constantly. This man lied to you. This was a con. You were had by this man, but we can make it better.
I mean, and at the end of it, you've got to look at the absolute dysfunction. I mean, you know, if this is how he runs his businesses, wow. I mean, honestly, because a lot of people that I know were, you know, had voted for Democrats in the past. They said, you know what, not real thrilled with Hillary, with the emails. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to give the business guy a chance. He's going to bring jobs back. And it was really the economic message.
Right. I mean, all his business was, and I mean, this was, he was basically playing a businessman on TV, right? The Trump Organization had essentially become a marketing shell with money coming in from Russians and who the heck knows who else to buy apartments and other, you know, real estate things with the Trump name on it, which was frequently licensed out. I mean, the only business he was running, you know, was the one he fake ran on television. I mean, it was absurd. But people in New York City, where, you know, he received very few votes, were fairly aware of this. I think it only belatedly occurred to to us that other people really thought what was going on TV was real life.
Yeah. And now, here's the thing. I mean, the Democrats rolled out their better deal plan. I think a part of this better deal has to be the conversation, as we've been saying, around bringing in some type of single payer. Do you think that the Democrats can get their act together fast enough to get on board? Because almost immediately what you saw was the Democrats in a circular firing squad shooting themselves over social issues.
Right. I mean, you know, the better deal mentioned pharma costs, which are important. I don't want to say they're not important. I think this is one issue, and the only other issue I've seen this happen with is the gay marriage, where it almost feels like the base and the population are starting to run ahead of the party. And I almost think they're frantically trying to catch up instead of bringing people along. And I assume at some point this will even itself out. It almost has to, especially as the insurance situation continues to sort of go on. Because keep in mind, I mean, as I said, even if the situation is what it is today, the status quo is not particularly good. I think the last time I was on your show, I was discussing the article I published in The Atlantic about how so many people were having increasing trouble even paying their medical bills with insurance because of the increasing high deductibles in their own networks, surprise billing, a problem that will only get worse if nobody deals with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at some point, you know, you have to, you know, and this is one of those things that, you know, just mind blowing to me that we have so many people who are in love with the system that we've had for so long that's left so many people behind, that's been so costly, and, you know, when you need it, isn't there. I mean, it's just, I guess, you know, I keep going back to maybe there's hope. I keep wanting to be optimistic, but I'm struggling.
Yeah, actually long-term optimistic, though short-term not, because I do believe this will be dealt with. I think at a certain point everybody will realize this is just not functioning. I mean, non-functioning is not the right word, that it's not working for many people or not working particularly well. I mean, what I would say is, you know, the defenses at this point of both either what we have now or the, you know, taking away what we have, or sometimes, you know, can really fall into, you know, almost absurd contortions. This morning on Fox and Friends, apparently, they were ranting about what happened last night. And they were saying, well, now healthy people will have to pay for sick people. And I was like, well, I mean, that is what insurance is, and that is what health covering health care generally is, right? I mean, healthy people do pay for sick people. The same way when you buy car insurance, you're paying for often other people's car accidents.
Yep.
I mean, this is absurd.
It's called insurance. And again, is it that they don't understand the basic concept of insurance? And I go back to, you know, Donald Trump saying that in the New York Times article that, well, you start off as a young person, you pay $12 a year, and by the time you get to be old, you got a pretty good plan. And I'm going, what is that? I don't even know what you're talking about.
I think he was talking about, like, universal life insurance or something is what it sounded like to me, which is, you know, a not-so-great insurance policy for many people. Life insurance policy, I should say.
Yeah.
I mean, he was definitively not discussing health insurance, right? I think it's that they're just, I think in Donald Trump's case, he might literally not know what he's talking about. I think
might.
For everybody else, you know, they're filling airtime, they've got to say something, and there's really no defense, right, of what they're doing. So they're just sort of scrambling and trying to grasp at various straws and babbling anything that comes to mind, and hoping they don't get called out on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's mind-blowing to me. And the hope is that collectively we have a moment. Maybe this is that wake-up moment. There's part of me that's hopeful that, you know, some of the more moderate Republicans, if there are any left, will come around with the Democrats and say, hey, how do we fix this? Because it is ultimately a sixth of our economy. Are you surprised that they were willing to basically throw a sixth of our economy into absolute chaos with a bill that they presented the Democrats an hour before the vote?
It struck me as phrased. I mean, if there's any silver lining in this, besides the fact that it didn't happen, it's that, you know, not business interests, you know, don't get their way in the Republican Party all the time, right? The insurance companies were livid. The healthcare industry was livid. I mean, pretty much anybody who, you know, had anything to do with the, you know, this had, was livid. But, you know, we always think the Republicans are, you know, enthralled business interests, which they mostly are. But in this case, they clearly weren't. So maybe there's hope for convincing them in a better direction, not always to give in to business interests, right?
Yeah, maybe.
But that's the only thing I can take away. I mean, I feel like I'm now on Fox and Friends grasping for straws as well, by the way. So
last question I've got for you, because, you know, I've been saying throughout this whole debacle that the Republicans don't have to do anything. They've already done enough, in my view, to create the uncertainty, to strip money out of the ratings pool that helps communities pay for the bringing in people who are sick. They've already done enough, in my view, to cause the insurance companies to flee for the hills. I'm curious your thoughts.
I absolutely agree. And that's why I think the Democratic emphasis now has to be on pushing forward for what comes next, because that is going to have to be the next argument, right? We can't keep reliving this fight over and over and over again. We have to push forward. This is clearly going to be an ongoing issue. It's clearly going to be impacting many people, even with it staying at status quo. And we need to have an answer. What are we going to do? And I think the answer needs to be, we are going to take care of everybody.
There you go. Helene, I appreciate you taking time for us. Always great talking with you. I'd love to talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, and same.
All righty, Helene Olin. Again, if you want to check out her website, HeleneOlin.com, we'll get a link at TheRickSmithShow.com so you can take a look at her writings and all of that. Get her books as well. Quick break, right back. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.